Was there a wig involved with this?
I'm not giving anything away.
Oh, there was.
It's weird.
I would probably give Ace of the Met more credit than the bike because of how good he is.
Mom Pyongyang.
Your Korean lessons have really come on, haven't they?
In the e-bike world, obviously, we're getting a lot more stuff out of China now. What they're bringing out is amazing technology that is sort of showing the rest of the world how to do it. Have you thought about trying to be a smoother rider? What was
harsh.
That?
Right, hello, welcome to a brand new show here on GMBN. This is episode one of the Global Mountain Bike Show, the show that is going to cover everything from World Cup racing to bike packing to industry trends and everything in between, deep diving on hopefully the topics you want to hear about. So do let us know what they are in the comments down below. Now, this week it's myself, Rich Payne, and I'm joined by...
Hi, Rich. I'm Neil Dunn.
Oh, hi, Rich. I'm Owen the Bike Nerd.
Hey, God, how are we doing?
Good.
Of course, so good.
Yeah. Well, I'm quite excited because, obviously, I'm into downhill racing. We'll talk a bit about this week, but also some of the interesting tech stories, Owen, you can get into from what's come out of the race weekend.
High-tech bikes, low-tech bikes. There's loads to cover and kind of like dive into. We'll try and keep it brief because there's loads of other tech to talk about too.
Talking about high-tech bikes, Rich, you've been riding a 32S.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
How many times did you buzz your rear end on it?
Oh, my gosh. It's a big bike. Yeah, so if you've not seen it yet, you won't have because the video's out this weekend, so stay tuned.
Clever.
But it's all about mega mullets.
What's a mega mullet?
29 at the back, 32 at the front. It's wild. But this is actually, a potential sort of world's first GMBN exclusive because we've actually made a legitimate gravity-orientated one. We've seen it a lot in gravel, XC, sort of bike-packy kind of, what do you call it? Adventure-y bike type
adventure
stuff, right?
But like Cape Epic, someone raced the thing.
Cape Epic,
32, 32.
Nico Mullally actually won Sea Otter downhill. But on like
it's not a downhill.
No, he had XC tires on like 100 mil travel. But this is a legit people, 165 rear, 170 mil front. That's all I'm saying.
Was it a bit all over? You know, I can imagine it a bit wandery, a bit flexy.
Barge-like,
but
potentially.
Like, can you feel the wheels moving around?
Yeah, it's an odd sensation. And like, I don't want to give too much away, but so manoeuvring
it
around.
Rich, give it away.
Manoeuvring it around is an odd one. It in the air is even odder because it's such a big thing to throw around.
See,
in
that
the
wouldn't
air.
Be an issue for me.
No, maybe.
Wouldn't be a problem.
Getting it in the back of my car would probably be an issue.
Yeah, long wheelbase vans are a necessity.
To be fair, I put a 26er in the other day, didn't even have to take anything off. Just went. God.
Yeah,
went
but
all
it,
the way
I mean,
back
it was
in.
Interesting. Real interesting. It's something I'm looking forward to sharing it out there. What have you been up to, Neil?
Funnily enough, I just bought myself a hardtail frame, which I'm very excited about because I have not had a... Well, I've got a pump track bike, but actually I'm excited. I've got a titanium hardtail,
if you're
an old school GMBN watcher, I've talked about them for years and I've actually gone and bought myself one, so I'm quite stoked about that.
So like long travel, burlier rig or...?
No, I'm going to make it a trail bike.
Oh, nice.
I haven't specced it. I haven't got the frame yet.
All right.
In shipment, but I'm going to just spec it up and smash it about.
Oh, very nice. Well, there you go.
All right, well, look, we got a ton of topics to dive into because there was the first round of the UCI Downhill World Cup from Mona Yongpyeong,
I think.
That's pretty much South Korea.
I think Mona is the resort, I believe. Pyongyang
not
is the
owner.
Place. Well,
maybe.
She could be. She could be. Yeah, why not?
I don't know. I mean, a whole host of craziness happened, but so biggest headline, Ace of the Met, Frameworks Racing winning.
Did you guys get up at 6 a.m. to watch it?
Oh,
I think the women's side actually earned that, but I got up and watched that.
Oh, wow.
Through the highlights of that.
Oh, nice.
And then the men started at 6 a.m. So
committed.
I got, it was good, I thought.
Oh, well, good location for racing then.
Yeah, do it more often because I can still spend the day with kids.
Yeah, no, it's good. I didn't watch it. I was embarrassed.
No, I went for a ride at that earlier.
Really?
Yeah.
On a Saturday?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
He's got to get laps in. He's doing a bigger ride. Like,
yeah, which we'll get onto that later on. But Ace of the Met, he won it on a Frameworks bike.
Yeah.
And what I sort of grabbed my attention of that was that it was almost the simplest bike took the win. No tech, like in terms of electronics, telemetry on it during race, like, you know, no flashy lights, nothing. Not a battery.
No, I think it's fun because only last week before we had the kind of Demo 11 launched from Specialized, and that's bells, whistles, super duper carbon fiber frame. Yeah. It's been in prototype for ages, like years and years. It's got effectively like a four bar linkage, but it's got extra links to do stuff and drive stuff. It's got two chain rings. It's got two chains to drive the transmission. So it is really fancy. And then Loic's been running it with Olin's suspension, but with electronic stuff on it that's been really custom. And
I don't think the rest of the team are on that anymore, are they? I think.
Oh.
I've got a funny feeling someone said that it's just Loic on that now, which is quite interesting as well.
Well, that almost leads into this wonderful conspiracy theories that the lights aren't like to do with turning his suspension on off. It's something to do with timing.
Like he's up at the split or down,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
Back in the day, Nico Villiers on his team, they'd have spotters on the track and they'd shout at him.
Well, that's just a pitboard and motor, right? That's all that is, basically.
I think it'd be quite cool.
Well, I mean, that's good to know, though, right?
But the juxtaposition, we've got this high-tech, super high-end, like jazzy, also mega expensive, I think, what, $6,500 for the frame. I think that might have included a shock as well. And then you've got the winning bike, which is effectively like a metal front end, a carbon back end, and depending on how old you are, either looks like a Turner burner or a Kona stab.
It definitely looks like a stab.
2000.
Yeah, it does. It does.
It's got an O-chain on it, which is quite interesting. It's just the one sort of techie bit. However, I've seen lots of funny memes, like with the Specialized engineers. You know, all the, you know, the meme with like the numbers coming out. Nico Mullally, whose company's Framework, sat there smoking a cigarette on a
deck chair.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like a Nicky Lauda sort of blunt kind of thing, isn't it? Of like,
James Hunt.
Not blunt. Sorry, James Blunt.
James might have been smoking a blunt, but that's a different equation.
Maybe that's why I got confused.
However, I would probably give Ace of the Met more credit than the bike because of how good he. Years.
And it's not, I'm not saying it's a terrible bike, you know, it's good bike.
Actually, I think their trail bike looks brilliant. Yeah. But I think Ace has shown up, he's just been a phenomenal talent, and he had to really perform because he qualified fastest, which is great, but it also means where I've said people need to just wait till the race happens.
Yeah.
Because actually, it's a very different case of winning a junior race. But actually, when you're the fastest qualifier, you're the last person up on the top of the hill. Everyone's
so
bottom.
Much pressure.
It's a completely different feeling to win it to racing in junior. And I think we'll be seeing a lot more of Ace of the Met for, you know, the next 20 years probably.
And I guess it's also coming off the back of last year. Not to dive into racing too much, but he didn't actually win that much last year.
It's hardline. Well, in terms of like a pro race.
Yeah. But
and he also
but at World
had,
Cups,
you know,
he struggled.
He had a lot of competition with the Allrun brothers and the rest of those junior guys. As I think there were six junior races in the top 20 qualifying, maybe.
Yeah, three in the top 10 in finals.
Right,
the Allruns.
Yeah,
and Acer, and then you had Tyler Waite.
Tyler Waite,
New Zealander.
But you can talk about the bikes as well. Obviously, the Commissars have had a lot of success.
Well, yeah, and this weekend, I think it's important to talk about Valley as well.
Showed up new team,
completely different bike, works completely differently.
Did she finish last year on a YT? Didn't she?
She did. She might have been unbranded.
Due to issues.
Low key, wasn't it?
Yeah, and obviously we had Bruni in second. Yeah. His teammates both. One crash, one puncher, maybe? I can't remember.
So that begs, you know, going back to tech or rider, you know, you've got the winning bike is the simplest to a degree. Like I said, no idlers, no batteries, nothing.
I agree, but I think it's a very, very well thought out bike in terms of geometry, suspension.
Yeah. Tested,
I don't think there's any lack of, design and engineering got into it, even though it may look simple.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Versus second place, third place, very race proven. You know, that special.
All the tech, carbon
years,
fiber.
Like years on development. You know, you've got the powerhouse of Specialized and a very large budget.
The big S,
Yeah, very large. But and Commensal, you know, not poor. Should we say either? Framework's tiny.
Yeah.
Although I did hear about some of these junior riders coming in and getting the big butts because they've obviously been performing at the junior level and they've come in to like serious six figure salaries, which is I think that's the first that I've heard of that happening in this new world of downhill mountain bike racing.
For sure, but they're coming in and finishing top 10. So
I'm winning,
So bike or rider, let us know in the comments down below or click on the link to answer our poll as well. I'd love to hear what you think.
We're into punctures next because we saw, you know, at the race there were a lot of punctures.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I had a puncture.
You're going to get one next ride.
Testing fate.
I'm going to have to interrupt. This blows my mind. You can't remember?
No.
I got one last week. Really annoying.
I was filming with Ferg the other week and he was on lightweight tyres, but he put a hole in one. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was on lightweight tyres as well. It's really frustrating. I was like, how is this still a thing?
Have you thought about trying to be a smoother rider? What was that?
Oh, wow.
Or you could go like me and just go a little bit slower.
Both viable options, I'm sure. But how is it a thing still?
Sorry, I'm butting in, which is a bit rude, so I do apologise. I think it's really fun because we're riding on air. We're literally like floating on air when you ride a bike. And if you're a racer or if you're riding hard, I think for the average rider, sounds awful, but the bell curve of most riders, punctures are not a thing because either you kind of learn, oh, if I run that low pressure, I'll puncture. Or if you're racing and you're on the edge, then you'll just crash through rocks or something along those lines. So I think tyres have gotten loads better. But the problem is that we're still trying to get away with the lightest carcass that we can, because that means that it feels nicer. It's a lighter bike. It can accelerate quicker, potentially. So I think that's why we're always going to be on this edge. But coming back to you, Neil, and you not getting punctures, is that because you're running inserts?
No, I hate inserts. I've told you this already.
Oh.
I can't stand it.
It's literally a trigger word for me.
Yeah, okay, right.
I can't stand that. It feels like I'm running the heaviest tyre ever. And just the way the bike reacts to that, I just don't like it. And also, I remember I did the Andy Pacifico quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
Early enduro.
And had a tyre insert in that's so hard to get on that I then just put my tyres hard anyway. So I thought, if I rip a tyre in the race, I'm absolutely screwed because I can't get this insert
off. You kind of counteracted the effect of
and
the
I've got, yeah. If you have a big slice in your tyre, you're knackered anyway. But it is interesting to see that some of these world's best racers are still arguably, you know, kind of making their seasons very, very difficult.
Yeah. Or just not finishing races, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One or two of those a year, and that's a year done with, really.
I found it nuts that I went to Novo Mesto last year at the XC, I think it was the opener. No, they'd been raced in Brazil.
Yeah.
But effectively, first one in Europe. And it wasn't so much, I thought there'd be very few teams on inserts, but effectively, unofficially, there's like one team that's not running them. Everyone else runs
really?
Them.
I mean,
yeah,
I would.
In a kind of like secret score away, there's big teams that are sponsored by Vittorio or they've got sponsors for inserts. But essentially all the teams are running some kind of insert. But that's because they've got Tech Zone in XC. So it's like they need something that gets the rider to the Tech Zone that can switch it out.
Right, I get it.
But I think you're wrong.
Fine.
I think you're off your chops, despite calling out my unsmooth riding potential. I wouldn't even dream of running, especially the rear wheel, without inserting.
I'd like to see. I think you should go and do a survey, Owen.
The bell curve,
to find out who does puncture, whether they're heavy, fast, slow, experienced, whatever.
I'd like to know type of riding
and where on the edges, like myself, or I don't really get them. I haven't for ages. Like, where do I fit?
Thought about trying
curve?
Either.
Yeah, maybe.
I run an insert because I'm not as skillful as you two. Well, so I know that there's a risk that I'm going to run out of my limited luck and I'll hit something and then it'll be, deflation station.
Did you see, actually, going back to racing a little bit, so there was quite a few punches, but on the Commensal bikes, underneath the valve, it looked like a square box.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that could have been.
Like a mini tyre inflator?
I did wonder. It doesn't seem practical to me.
We've
to have a battery
like,
and weight. We've seen counterweights.
Like monitors and stuff as well.
You know, and like cars where they balance the offset of the valve. So that would be at the other end. So that would make sense.
Goldstein's actually been experimenting with that, hasn't he?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Could it be a little CO2?
How would you set that off? You need the sensors.
Magic.
Exist. The sensors there, those tyre whizzes.
Yeah, I think that's
could it be
most
a compressor,
likely.
But the battery would weigh a ton.
I think the compressor doesn't work, but a little CO2, that could work. Again, it's not light.
Have you ever heard them little compressors? Well, they're quite annoying.
Oh, yeah,
they're like quite a thing if they kick in.
Imagine if you got your BO as you're riding.
Oh, my God. I think that might be a new level of tech that we just maybe don't need.
Owen,
but
you'd be into this, I'm sure of it. You know, in Iceland where they have the tyres with a valve, there's like a tube that comes out of the middle of the hub into the tyre, and when they drive off-road, they let their big balloon tyres down.
I have seen
6
it.
PSI.
Yeah.
There was a brand in the 90s that did it for mountain bikes so you could adjust. Actually, what am I saying? There's a company that did it up until last year. I think they went bust.
Yeah, I saw that.
I can't remember the name. So they had front and rear effectively hubs that inflated and deflated your tyres. And as you're riding along, you could change the pressure, which sounds madness.
Niche.
It is niche, but it won Roubaix.
Did it?
Yeah.
Well, I said the exact same thing.
There you go.
I can't think of why that didn't catch on more.
Well, it was really expensive.
Do you know what?
and heavy and complicated. Yeah.
But I've got another theory. Tracks have got quite, you know, and this isn't racing anymore, just in general, but like bikes are way more capable.
Yes.
Bikes, you know, especially short, even XC bikes are so capable now. We still want to keep weights low. So tyres are, you know, we're experimenting with like graphene and sidewalls like Vittorias and stuff like this. But we still want to keep lightweight tyres. So we're pushing equipment harder and harder on rougher tracks.
Agreed, yeah.
But we're not maybe making stuff sometimes as strong as it needs to be.
Haven't we been like promised these sort of honeycomb tyres forever? I was just thinking actually, you know, like electric cars are heavy, they use tyres. I wonder if that may prompt someone to design something that solves tyres for everybody, not just cars.
But I think you need to retry inserts. That's why we'll come back and chat again. Too.
Why? I haven't got any punctures. Don't need them.
Well, you're going to get them now. That's it.
Yeah, you have. All right. I think it's poll time. Let us know. Poll down below. Tubes or tubeless? What are you running? All right, moving on though. We talked about, obviously...
Youth,
right? Barriers to entry, youth cycling improving, buying a bike for affordable prices...
Well, we've just talked about $6,500 frame.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
However, I do think nowadays, if you look at what you can get for your money, particularly in hardtails, I see around by me, like anyone sort of under 18, got really nice, sort of jazzy looking hardtails that are simple. Nowadays, they're reliable. You can ride it at school. You can ride it on the pump track. You can go mountain biking in the woods at the weekend on it. And actually, those bikes nowadays are probably cheaper than they have ever been, particularly if you look at the second-hand market now. £200-300, I bet you could get yourself a really cool hardtail that isn't just a bag of nails.
Yeah, agreed.
And is something that you can do so much stuff on as well.
You can do loads on hardtails. It feels like, yeah, I guess the industry is not forgotten, but hardtails are awesome in terms of, and now they're as good as they've ever been because we've got one bar, we've got disc brakes, we have got tubeless if you want to, we've got bigger wheels. Some of them are going to be mixed wheel size, for better or worse. But yeah, they're loads better than the kind of crummier hardtails that we had as youth.
And way more affordable. Upgradable, I think, is a huge one, right? So I think the ability to upgrade them as they're either broken or you become a better rider.
Yeah.
Like when I remember my first proper mountain bike, and we'll use proper fairly loosely, was a Ridgeback. I can't remember the model. Fully rigid.
Yep.
I broke the forks on it pretty quickly.
Really?
Yeah. I got some Mazzocchis for Christmas back. Jeez. This is a long time ago. Not shivers, eh? Mazzocchis.
Oh, nice.
And then I think I put some Maguras on it.
Oh, wow.
The hydraulic rim brakes, off the back of watching Martin at some point or something like that. But I think that's about it. I'd maxed it out then. There's not much else I could do to it.
But in some ways, it's quite good because that's the other thing is, in terms of improvements, that's, okay, you could invest in a better fork. You could invest in a better dropper post maybe, but you don't necessarily need to have like fancy electronic shifting on it. And you can get good entry-level shifting from like Qs, from Microshift as well, that's got a clutch on and it's one by, so you're not going to drop a chain, which is something I always did with a triple on my hardtail.
You would have spent a fortune on the equivalent bike, I think, that you can get nowadays. Even like things like Suntour forks, things like that now, they didn't exist. You know, we're talking when I started as well, where you would have to spend big money on a Mazzocchi fork, even though.
Home brakes back in the day or something like that.
Big money.
Like those would be like the first discs kind of popping up back then, right?
And there's, you know, I see a lot of Trek, Marlins, Marin, Cube bikes, all do good.
The other thing that's huge is that the geometry is actually sorted on them. Whereas opposed to having to like a 72 or 71 degree head angle, which is kind of a bit ropey and a bit sketchy, unless you're just doing trials maybe, but they're much nicer to actually ride.
Agreed. Yeah, I do think they are, like you said, that's a very valid point, is that they're more capable than ever.
You agreed, yeah.
More capable than ever. Like, this bike couldn't do what I hopefully wanted it to do back in the day. It would break all the time. And like you said, almost every other ride, going back, you would get a puncture. The tyres were wafer thin. Like, they were rubbish, right?
Yeah.
And you were running, like, super skinny tubes. So
yeah, and skinny tires, like 2.1 or 2.2 was kind of
yeah,
big.
It was inevitable.
Yeah, I've just got sort of been through this process. Just bought my eldest son, who's 9. It bought him a hardtail.
Yeah,
and like you know, it's got Tektro brakes on it. Everything works really well. And you're talking, you know, around 500 quid for something that you know I'll get a load of use out of as well, and yeah. it's going to last.
Building some core memories there. My son's not quite there yet. He's just toppling over his balance bike.
But also, I look at the sort of the amount of trail, like the pump tracks that are out there now compared to when I was doing it.
Yeah.
It's much more easy to get into as well, I think, now. There's a bit of everything. That you can
go on, I see what you're saying.
I think it's that thing of if you're living in a city or a town that's got pump tracks or the access to trails, then it can be.
Talk a little older, so like 12, 13 plus. I think that's when it becomes a little trickier unless it's on your doorstep or close
Agreed.
By or your parents are into it sort of thing.
Agreed.
You know, I'll end up taking Fred for a bike ride all the time.
Yep.
He'll be on his little seat on the front. When he's a bit older, 5, 6, he'll still come with us because I want to go for a ride. When he gets to 12, 13, I'll be like, get out the door, you bugger. I want to go solo. And at which point, he probably won't ride. Leave him with his mum.
No, he'll be so keen.
No, he'll be mad for it, to be fair. And he'll still come riding. But
obviously, we're talking about the racing as well from, you know, some of these juniors and the junior women. You know, Elif Oscar, I think she was the fastest time of the day.
Yeah.
So these races are getting younger, it seems, which, you know, I think it's a symptom of these kids getting better bikes, getting into it earlier, the accessibility. But I also think it's a generational thing as well. I remember going to Santa Cruz back, you know, when I was younger in 2004, meeting a guy called Jamie Golston, who was a pro then.
Yeah.
Obviously, living in California, his dad was a pro skater, and that sort of blew my mind. It's like, how can you have, imagine your dad being
was a pro, yeah.
But now I think we're seeing that with the generations, mountain bikers got older. There are parents now that are ex-pro, but also just riders, and they're bringing their kids into it. And I think that's what we're seeing with people like Jackson Goldstone and these other guys.
Well, I mean, you're also describing yourself.
Yeah.
You're literally, you know, describing yourself, and hopefully, like, Fred will be the same. Not that I want to push him into biking, but, you know, he will obviously inevitably zip around on a little bike because...
Because I
would like him to do that, whether he carries
and
it
I guess
on.
That's the, if there's the investment from family, but if there isn't the investment from family or there isn't the local trails, then it's, that's where, I guess, mountain biking together, all of us have to work together. And I guess why, for me, I like a blue trail anyway, but blue trails are so important is because it's lowers that entry point so that somebody is like, oh, it's a safe route that kids can do almost on their tod if they're in their teens. But yeah, it's a fun one. How do we get more people into it? So
find it a bit difficult around by me, actually. All the trails, there's lots of pump tracks, but actually when you get out into the woods, the trails are pretty difficult, either too steep, hilly up or just too technical as well. So yeah, it's actually quite hard to find somewhere that's easy enough for those kids in the middle that have learned to ride, but you want to take them for their first proper mountain bike ride. But there are places a bit further away, Cannock Chase, all these British trail centres are really good for that first off-road step.
Yeah, I mean, that's circling back round, I suppose. That's like being a product of your environment when we talk about Jackson Goldstone from, you know, Whistler Way, sort of, you know, Canadian, all these amazing Canadian riders coming through.
Yeah, I thought that. I think I first went to Whistler in 05, 06.
Yeah, you probably saw him on a balance bike.
I think I've seen the videos of him.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, you had this amazing place. Even then, there was stuff everywhere. Yeah. But there really wasn't that much talent coming from there.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's attracted it. People move there.
Yeah.
Like, people like Remy and Sally are pros. But, and you've now got them, you know, Jackson and people like Finn Isles all coming through. So obviously, having the environment does eventually bring the talent through.
You've got to look at all these Kiwi riders with places like Queenstown and Nelson and all that as well. I like to think that, you know, back in our day when we were lads, the trail centres weren't a thing, right?
No, but then,
my dad would just drop me off at the local woods.
Same,
just pick us up in 3 hours.
One parent would drop us off, the other.
Yeah, right, exactly. And like, if you broke your bike, well, gutted. You're just there for a long time. Yeah, whilst you're a friend. Or try, But that, you know, it was very different. Whereas, like I said, now we've got trail centres, bike parks, pump tracks popping up left, right and centre. Surely that can only be a good thing for the youth of today, tomorrow, whatever. Like, you know, kids coming through.
I hope so.
It's more accessible. Mountain biking has become more accessible.
I think you look at other pro sports that are more established, like football, where the kids just want to play it and they do get in early. And I'm not saying that particularly for my kids, I don't want to push them into anything they don't want to do. I don't necessarily want to recommend being a pro mountain biker that much, considering the injuries and everything.
Yeah,
but it's much, easier to see the route into doing that nowadays.
Well, so that does bring us on nicely to like sort of the are kids under pressure too earlier on when it comes to mountain biking and racing and things? Is the fun being drawn out of it? You know, there's a whole host of questions there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I just wouldn't want to force that. You know, I think it's great if kids want to do it, and I want to see more. Particularly, I think when you go to places like America and Canada, there's a large percentage of young girls still doing it. And I think in the UK, we seem to lose a lot of the girls from teenage. They sort of fall out of love with it a little bit.
Just sport in general, I think.
Maybe, I think so. Obviously, we've seen a lot of success from races, like people like Rachel Atherton. But, just in general participation, you go to a mountain bike place in the UK. I think it's growing for sure. But I think compared to like North America, we don't have as many young girls riding bikes.
Yeah, don't we do? I think we could do more to help that situation, but yeah,
More people in general on bikes is always a better
thing,
right?
Yeah.
So then on that front, bikes are mountain biking's more accessible than ever.
Yes,
bikes are to a degree more affordable than ever. But the secondhand market.
Agreed.
And when it doesn't, if you haven't got £350, £500 for one, but there are even cheaper options. It may not just last as long or something, but the ability to get into it is there, which I think has opened the doors to mountain biking in new places. So sort of going back to Mom Pyongyang.
That's the place.
Nailed it.
Your Korean lessons have really come on, haven't they?
Mountain biking and the bike as a tool to get out and adventure more has got to be one of the best ones.
Yeah, it does. It sort of inspires me when you see the racing go into South Korea and you think, what else goes on in South Korea? I wonder what other mountain biking there is to be had in these places that I've never really investigated. And I don't think, have you ever ridden in Asia?
No.
I've never.
No.
Well,
I was going to say Australia.
You weren't sure.
Well, no, but like Australia is in that direction, but it's not Asia.
Yeah. So I raced the World Cup downhill in 2001, maybe in Japan.
Ah,
memories
going. So it was 25 years ago. Yeah, 2001.
Wow,
and it was massive then. There was a huge crowd, and it kind of felt like we should be doing this. We should be going to Asia. I don't know why it's taken 25 years for pro racing to get back there. Have they done cross country in Asia in the meantime?
I don't think not a World Cup level. No.
I think it was kind of slightly disappointing, the fan turnout. Also, I don't know how easy it was to get there.
Yeah.
But I would imagine it's not the easiest. I never really looked into it, but,
It feels like it should be easier. It's a ski resort. So
you're blocked from the north.
It's true.
True,
You ain't coming down.
No, but I guess actually there's kind of like bigger global things at play in terms of travel over certain countries was sort of potentially limited if you're flying out from Europe. But
I think the fact that it's potentially an untested, it's foreign waters really, isn't it? But the in terms of how's the race been
agreed.
There?
Agreed. There's no test event or anything like that. So
No, there obviously is a scene there for people to show up and watch it. And just, talking about wider Asia, I know that even on our GMBN demographics, like Philippines has always been massive for us. A lot of viewers there, and India as well.
Yeah, it
is way up there nowadays. So we know that there's these places that we're not directly sort of connected to, and we've never actually been. Even China, obviously. YouTube, it does not happen in China. It's
or Instagram. Anything like social media is quite...
So we don't know, right? Really. But I have been told in the past, there's a guy I met at Sea Otter who says we were massive. This was 8 years ago, probably, said GMBN is massive in China. That someone was ripping them and putting them on the early version of what I can't remember what it was called over in China. So
I shan't try and say anything, don't worry.
Okay. There are people watching Vikings. There must be quite a sizable amount of people.
There's
riding.
So many brands now coming out of China, whereas previously it was kind of like Taiwanese manufacturing and Taiwanese brands were doing an incredible job, and there is still that there, and that's still incredible. But now there's loads of Chinese brands entering the market, and that in itself is amazing. And it's not just for export. There are mountain biking and mountain bikers in China.
So here you go. We obviously do little experiments with AliExpress bikes and stuff
like
that. Well, someone actually messaged me and said, well, some of the brands that we've been using are just normal.
Yeah.
They're like normal brands out there. They're just used brands. We're there thinking, oh my God, these things are so alien. And
yeah.
Why are people using these? But actually, they're just a bike brand.
Yeah.
Which I might sound terribly naive and close-minded to not know that, but maybe just because I don't see it, not exposed to it, whereas the millions and millions of people in China or cyclists, yeah. they do. And
In the e-bike world, obviously, we're getting a lot more stuff out of China now. Yeah. A lot motor manufacturers, obviously DJI and Avionox, and they're really...
Cat amongst the pigeons,
well,
right?
Changing the game is such an overused cliche, but actually what they're bringing out is amazing technology that is sort of showing the rest of the world how to do it.
Yeah.
And even on the road, what is that, X-Lab? What do you know
it
about
that? It is
them?
X-Lab. Well, not a lot, because I haven't got a mountain bike yet, but they sponsor a Pro Tour road team. They've got a huge booth at Sea Otter.
Controversial, that
sort of
big team bike brand that no one really heard of.
It was controversial because I guess in some markets people won't have heard of necessarily Merida, even though for lots of people they're huge, because I don't think their Merida aren't that big in the US, for example, but they're huge in Taiwan and China. But I think with X-Lab it was different again because, people hadn't heard of them, but they are a huge brand in China already and now they're looking to expand, and their booth at Sea Otter was huge. The bikes look really sorted, really amazing sort of like specs and really like sharp pricing. So as it'd be a cat amongst the pigeons again if they join mountain biking.
To go full circle then, all of this we may not have thought about or known.
Agreed.
Until the mountain bike was used to take it to South Korea, right?
Yeah.
China, South Korea, open up these kind of markets to a wider audience and educate us slightly, if you like, to stuff that we weren't aware of. And that's happened because of a mountain bike.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it's really
flipping
cool.
Good.
Yeah.
It is flipping good. And we've all been lucky enough on this channel actually to have gone to some pretty cool places again because of the mountain bike, be it a racing, adventuring, trade shows, God knows what.
I've done South America a few times, four times, I think. And back in the day, when I was racing. That was a huge one as well in Brazil. All the whole South American downhill world flew over to Brazil. All the guys from Chile, they went to watch that race. And that's a huge market. Santiago blew me away when I went there.
Mad place, isn't it?
I couldn't believe how many people were riding bikes in that city. And the riding's right there. It's an amazing city. But, you ride out from city centre. Actually, there's a place right in the city centre. And on Sundays, they shut the roads down for traffic.
Okay,
it's full of bikes and you can ride out to the hill.
I've heard that in Colombia as well. There's a couple of big cities where it's just closed on Sundays because it's bike riding.
Yeah.
And you're like,
that had an EWS go there.
Oh, yeah.
So, that just goes to show. And another place, like Madeira, I think is a great example as well. Madeira, relatively unknown in the mountain bike world. An EWS went there 2-3 times.
Yeah.
Blew up.
Now it's a riding destination.
Shuttling, investment in tracks. So I just think it's cool.
So there's another round. I think next year that South Korea place is back on board.
Okay.
But it'd be cool to see a bit more, wouldn't it?
Agreed, yeah. I mean, I guess we need to touch on the XC as well because, the XC looked amazing in terms of the track, but it felt like wasn't necessarily fully rain ready, but hopefully it doesn't rain next year because weather's always going to be a thing.
There's so much going on there.
It did feel like the event was a bit rough around the edges, maybe. I don't know.
Are we going to mention hard tails?
Ooh. It's quite controversial. Why is it controversial? Yeah, someone showed up, a Polish rider, I believe, showed up on a hard tail who had qualified, so it's legit to show up, but I don't think it's the right place. I don't know what... You're never going to qualify on a hardtail, a World Cup downhill. Or if you do, you shouldn't. The track shouldn't be...
Well, that's a famous thing from... I know what you're going to say. I know exactly from Phil Atwill, Lee Gang, a fair few years back now, but just to prove a point.
Yeah, the track wasn't up to spec. But
we could dive into this for a long time to come. I think we should probably wrap it up there.
Yep.
Lastly then... Before we move on, anywhere else you'd like a bike to take you?
Oh, well, anywhere. I mean, that's what's great about them. They go anywhere.
I see you at the Mendips at the weekend. Don?
Yep.
You know what? I've been thinking about going to Ireland, actually.
It's a good spot.
Ooh, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Never ridden a bike over there. Yeah. So that'd be a nice thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Good pubs
County
too.
Wicklow and all that. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. Okay, well, we do have a competition winner to announce as well. If you watched the last Dirt Shed show... Well, you'd have seen that there was a competition to win an FSA Gradient handlebar. The winner is on screen now. Congratulations. That is winging its way to you. Oh, but boys, it's nearly the end. I thought we'd have a quick catch up. What's coming up?
Good chat, yeah.
On the channels this week. Go ahead, lead us out, Owen.
Right, we've got two Hugenes built differently, so same bike but different riders, and then we've got a bit of a history dive into like a really iconic bike, and I'll stop there.
What bike? You got to tell us what bike it is, surely.
Well, that's part of the tease.
It'd be old,
actually,
wouldn't it? It'd be weird.
It's a white.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's a Preston.
Preston.
Yeah.
I rode that bike. Yes.
Yeah.
Never rode it since, have you?
No.
There's a whole video in why.
On EMBN, so I've the new Avanox system. You can pair it with your heart rate strap tell the bike what heart rate you want to sit at. So smart heart rate control.
What?
And you can get, like I did a ride, and it's basically all exactly zone 3, really consistent heart rate. So you can basically use your bike as
like a smart trainer
to train, basically, and have fun at the same time. Save you messing around on a road bike or any of that rubbish. You can actually ride your main
bonkers.
Bike.
No, that sounds
quite good.
All right. Well, I, as mentioned earlier in the show, we have the Mega Mullet coming up. 32 up front, 29 out back.
Was there a wig involved with this?
I'm not giving anything away.
Oh, there was.
There is.
There was.
Magic.
I found it. No, I'm not going to say no more.
Don't ruin
I'm
it.
I'm not going to say no more.
That's a perfect tease.
There you go.
Oh, we worked together for too long. But that is coming up on the channel this week. Look, first episode in the books. Boys, it's been fun.
I think so, yeah. I hope so, yeah.
See you next time.
Hopefully, yeah.
Thank you very much for watching all. We'll see you later.
Isn't it a ginger wig?
It is a ginger wig. I've got it in my bag, so I'm not keeping that at home.
What?
I brought it in.